Thanks for listening to The Drive with Big Al and D-Mac, on demand, brought to you by SEL Mortgage, the leaders in Colorado of special circumstance lending, helping everyone, including people with unusual financing needs. Locally owned and operated, visit myspecialmortgage.com. That's myspecialmortgage.com.
The lead story with the NFL is the anthem stuff is everything's being put on hold after the Dolphins owner came out and was like, wait a second, I had nothing to do with any of this. Like, we haven't made any decisions. We're being castigated as bad guys. And I told you earlier in the show, I talked back and forth with Adam Gase. He had no idea about it. And so now, I'm going to give the Dolphins a little bit of the benefit of the doubt here, Chad. As the owner and the coach, we're completely unaware of any of the policy things going on. And now the NFL and the NFLPA have called a timeout on all of it to sort of get together and talk. Where do you think this eventually ends up?
I don't know what's going to come out of these conversations. But my desire is whatever comes out of it is that there is some consensus and a united front here. It doesn't help the players' protest cause to be on the opposite side from the NFL. It doesn't help the NFL owners and coaches to be on the opposite side of the players. It doesn't help them be successful as a team. I think the more united they can be, even if each side does not get exactly what they want, if they can present a united front, that's going to be better for the league overall, players, coaches, front office, owners, everybody. And then from a fan perspective, they've got to find a way to put this issue at least kind of to bed so it does not become a part of every single NFL broadcast all season long. The fans are already fatigued with this issue. To make it a issue again all season long is only going to, again, hurt the league and in the end hurt the players' reasons or ability to successfully protest.
Okay, we'll see where it goes. We'll follow it and let you know. Chad, how important is winning as a coach to future success? Meaning, is it important to be a winner, or does that not matter all that much in terms of your record?
Is it important to be a winner?
Yeah. It's important to have a winning record.
As a coach?
Yeah.
Of course.
How important is that?
Over your overall winning record?
Yeah. Yeah, if you're in the league for 10 years as an assistant or a head coach, just the teams that you are on, how important is it for you to be part of winning teams, I suppose, you know, as a coach?
I suppose extremely important, but for the Cleveland Brown fans, you know what, Hugh Jackson's what, 1-31 over the last
right.
two seasons?
Right. Is that important?
Yeah, but if he finds a way this season to make a big leap, it becomes less important. Mm. I think fans are in the end, and owners even, are going to be more concerned about the trend of where you're going as opposed to what happened 3 or 4 years ago.
There's a friend of mine who was perusing the Broncos media guide and pointed out Vance Joseph's overall record as an NFL coach, as an assistant, and of course as a head coach. Now, we all know as a head coach, it's 5-11, right? So,
right.
Whatever. But Vance overall as an assistant coach, where he's been for the most part, including 7 playoff games, his overall record, and of course he wasn't the head coach, he wasn't in charge all the way, and he was only a defensive coordinator 1 year. But overall, it's 95-103-1.
Doesn't bother me.
Oh, that's an assistant. Overall record as an NFL coach, sorry, is 100-114-1. 100-114-1 overall.
Yeah.
Big deal, not a big deal.
Not a big deal.
Not a big deal.
Not a big deal.
Okay. Just checking.
The assistants who were with the Patriots, you know, the last 10 years, does that make, because they've been a part of that winning organization, they've got a great win-loss record as an assistant coach, does that make them a better coach?
Well, I just can tell you from my own experience, I've been on really good radio stations, and I've been part of some terrible radio stations. And the really good radio stations do things differently. It's not like I was at these bad radio stations and, you know, I've been in broadcasting for 30 years. So it's not like I was at bad stations and we were doing like everything the right way. No, there were reasons why the stations that were bad that I was at were bad. And, you know, when I was young, it was good to be at a bad radio station because there was a lot of opportunity to be at a bad radio station. You know, they were looking for new people and young people, and they were looking to do things that, you know, good radio stations weren't looking to do. So it's a good opportunity. So, you know, I think I was a good worker and tried hard and did all, you know, the best I could, even though I was at a bad radio station. So I didn't think I was a bad employee, but I could recognize this is not a good radio station. But I'll tell you this. The most that I ever learned in a short, compact period of my life was when I did a 3-month internship at a great radio station. I mean, it was night and day. I learned so much. And being around people that did things the right way and had been winning and winning for a long time, Chad, it made quite an impact. And those skills that I learned there, I took back actually to a bad radio station. And I tried to do things better or the right way because I saw how it was done. So now I'm proud to say here at The Fan, we do more things right than wrong, that's for sure. But it hasn't always been that way. And sometimes when I go on the road and broadcast somewhere else, I can see little things that other stations do. I'm like, oh, that's a good idea. You know, that's something pretty positive. And also, like, we did a radio broadcast from New Orleans before the Senior Bowl. Maybe the worst radio station I had physically ever seen in my life. I mean, it was bad. It was so bad. And instantly I could say, oh, these guys do not do certain things the right way. So I think there's something to the Patriots assistants being around where things are done. Because most likely, when they continue somewhere else, they're going to do more of those same things that they've seen work. And I wonder if Vance has really just been around enough winning situations.
I think there's something to be said for your point there.
You got a thought about it?
Yeah, other side.
All right, we'll do that next.
Sandy Clef here to tell you about SCL Mortgage, special circumstance lending, locally owned and operated. And if you're self-employed or work on commission, this is the place for you. Bank statement loans are back. You don't need tax returns to do your loan. In some cases, the bank statement loans can be done with credit scores in the low 600s. MySpecialMortgage.com on the web, 303-790-2222. The phone number, SCL Mortgage, licensed by the Colorado Department of Regulatory Agencies, number 1200716.
This ain't a song for the broken hearted.
Our man, Chad Brown, is just going over his fall football schedule for doing radio color analysis. Are you doing TV too?
Pac-12 Network, yes.
And you're doing Pac-12. What are you going to do, games?
Yes,
or just studio stuff?
So games.
So what nights are those games? How do you do that?
I balance it out between the two.
Okay. In the Pac-12, they've got Pac-12 After Dark on Friday nights. They got Thursday night games. Yes. They're all over the place,
they
right?
Are. Yeah.
So will you have a Pac-12 game, say, on a Friday night, and you'll be in Lincoln, Nebraska on a Saturday? Games like that?
I don't have my Pac-12 schedule in front of me, so I've got to go home and look at that and make sure it all fits and works.
Could it?
It could happen.
Wow.
Yes.
That's fun. That's a fun way to spend the fall, right?
It is. And then once college football season is over, then that opens up some pro stuff with Compass Media as well. So we'll see what happens.
Wow.
Because I did Tennessee versus at the 49ers
that
last year for Compass Media. So
that's fun, man. That's got to be a blast. Walk into the stadium, get your juice going, you're prepared for the game.
Oh, I love
it. Get your call on.
Oh, it's fantastic.
How is that not? Do you have good partners usually, good play-by-play guys?
Yes. Good producers. It's a great experience. The college football thing is just so great. Obviously, I've been to pretty much every NFL stadium.
I remember when you were like on a bus for like 8 hours going up to middle of nowhere doing CU games. Remember you told me I only get paid X amount of dollars for a game and I'm more or less going to spend like 18 hours in travel and doing the game and getting back?
Yeah.
You've earned it, man. Congratulations.
Thank you. Well,
that's
gosh.
Awesome. What is your, just let the listeners know, like, what are some of your college football games you're doing?
I've got, get my phone unlocked here. I've got Clemson at Texas A&M early in the season. Texas A&M at Alabama. That's going to be a great game.
Fun.
Florida State at Miami. Classic matchup there. Ohio State at Purdue. Good chance to see Ohio. So some of the top five teams in the country. Clemson will be top five. Yeah. Bama will be top five.
Yeah.
Ohio State probably top five. Texas A&M, definitely a top 10 team.
Yeah.
So Ohio State at Purdue, and then I finish up right now, Nebraska at Iowa.
Meanwhile, and then just for dessert, you'll have, you know, the Oregon States against Arizona's of the world, those sort of games, right?
I've got a Stanford game. I've got a Washington State game. I've got Colorado versus New Hampshire early in the season.
Colorado's playing New Hampshire?
Early in the season, yes.
New Hampshire?
New Hampshire.
UNH?
Yes.
All the kids that I went to high school with who stopped dreaming big went to UNH. That was, oh my God, we're going to go 40 minutes up the road to, you know, Hanover. It's going to be awesome. UNH has a football team that plays Division I football. That's stunning to me. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Well, what's their mascot? I should know.
I don't know.
It was 40 minutes up the road in Hanover.
I haven't started my research.
Or Concord, or I don't know where it was. Yeah, I had a bunch of kids from my high school go there, and it was just like, wow, you just don't really care that much anymore. And you're kind of like, no, not really. I had one buddy of mine, my best friend. He got into Syracuse. And he ended up going to UNH. Right.
Do they have a special major that he needed?
He got into the communication school. He got into the most highly regarded school of Syracuse, and he decided to go to UNH.
Interesting.
Some kids, Chad, they just they feel safer, closer to home. They don't really want to. They get scared by, you know, all that sort of stuff. He's turned out to have a very successful life. He's fine, you know, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. But it's like, wow, really? That's where you're going to go, huh? Anyways, good for you. All right, to the point about winning and losing and winning cultures and what you get from it, it doesn't bother you that Vance Joseph ultimately has losing records as a coach in the NFL?
It does, because as an assistant, you have such little control over that. Your job is to coach your position group, but to your point.
But if you're, and he was with Marvin Lewis for the most part, right?
Right.
As an assistant? How does Marvin, and I shouldn't say anything terrible because you may go work for the Bengals, I suppose, but Marvin Lewis, is he the longest tenured coach right now in the NFL?
Behind Belichick.
Behind Belichick. What kind of coach is Marvin Lewis?
I think Marvin Lewis is a very good coach. But as we've seen, you know, throughout maybe the last couple playoff appearances, they've been let down by some of their players. And I don't think Marvin gets to pick all the players on the roster. It's, you know, the Pac-Man Jones meltdown against the Steelers.
Right.
Vontaze Burfict against the Steelers.
Right.
They had that game won.
Right.
So this, you know, thought that Steelers haven't won a playoff game. Well, they certainly have had opportunities during Marvin's tenure to win playoff games. Go all the way back to Carson Palmer blowing his knee out. They were on a roll then. They were going to be really, really good. And they blew.
So maybe they got a little unlucky in that Marvin Lewis tenure.
They have been a little bit unlucky. That's why he's stayed around. I think Mike Brown is not the most aggressive of owners and is willing to take a chance on a free agent like a Vontaze Burfict, a free agent out of the college draft, or a Pac-Man Jones, because they come with baggage. Therefore, they can give them less money.
Now, I know what the argument could be. You could say, hey, D-Mac, what about Charlie Weiss? How'd he do after he left the Patriots? They were winning, and he went, and what? What'd that turn out to be?
Or Romeo Cornell.
Romeo Cornell. What'd that turn out to be? He was with Belichick for a long time. You know, why wasn't he a winner as a head coach? It's a safe argument. It's just maybe an interesting thing.
I think the more winning you're exposed to, the more winning ways you're exposed to, that's obviously going to be better than being in a negative situation.
But why don't you tell me, like, you're with the Steelers. What did the Seahawks, when you were there, what didn't they do that a winning culture in Pittsburgh did do? Like, what stood out to you? Like, wow, this is different.
All right, I'll tell you a story real quick. After, I think it was week two. I think we played away on the first game, week two. All the wives are out there after the game in the wives section.
Okay.
And the wives are asking my wife, what are you guys going to do after the game?
Okay.
And my wife says,
this is when you were at the Seahawks.
This is when I was with the Seahawks.
Okay. What are you guys going to do after the game? Okay.
And my wife's like, what do you mean? Well, aren't you guys going to go out to dinner someplace? Aren't you going to go get some food? She says, Chad's not going to want to go to dinner. We lost. And the other wives are like, it's okay. We lose all the time here. You still got to eat. So,
so they're not bothered by it.
They were not.
It you was, found out a little story, a little insight that losing doesn't bother us that much.
Right. So the wives with the Steelers knew that losing was not acceptable.
You lose a game, we're not group day to Chili's.
So you come walking out of the locker room in the old Three River Stadium and went into where the family section was. And if the Steelers lost, it was as somber of a place as there actually could be. You could hear a pin drop because the wives knew how seriously we took it and what the expectations were versus going just a year later to a wives section, family section in the Seahawks stadium. And it's like a party. And we lost by 21. So it's simply the expectation level is different, not just within the players or the coaches, but across the organization and even into the families.
I guess the bottom line, can you be satisfied losing?
And for
some, the answer is yes. That is a slippery slope, isn't it?
Yes.
Right. This is The Drive on The Fan. Yeah, we're talking about winning and losing cultures, and I think it's important. Vance Joseph has overall a losing record as an NFL coach, does it matter or not? It's not, you know, a horrible losing record. It's like 114-1. So for his length as a NFL coach, he's lost more games or been part of more losses than wins, 2-5 in the playoffs. So it's not like he's really seen magic happen as he's been an NFL coach.
Now, you can learn a lot from losing, mostly what not to do.
True, but it's tricky if you don't see what it takes to win. But that being said, sometimes it's that desire. Like the Broncos, were the fact that they were even close in the final game of the season to the Chiefs, I'm going to tell you, the only reason they were really that close is they took a good chunk of the starters out. Because the starters had quit on the Broncos. Aqib Talib and the rest. Go back and watch the first half. Watch the first series. And you can tell pretty quickly who was into playing in that game and who wasn't. And when they put the players in who don't play all that much, you know, they gave it a, hey, man, they tried, Chad. But at the end of the day, talent is ultimately going to win out. Losing and accepting losing can be... It can be contagious and accepting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, say whatever you want about my boy, Tim Tebow. My boy.
Timmy.
Now, that dude did not like losing. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You can say he was a terrible quarterback and all that. And there's plenty of ammo for you. But that dude wanted to compete. He wanted to win. I will never forget Tebow's, the first year with Tebow where he barely played. Remember that, Chad?
Yep.
That's when McDaniels got fired and the Broncos were, that's why we got Vaughn, because they went 4-12 that year. I will never forget being out at practice in December, and the Broncos were terrible. And Tebow played, the last four games, I believe
four.
Maybe three, four.
Mm-hmm.
Studisville was the coach. I walked out there, and you can only watch the first 15 minutes of practice, and it's December. It's, you know, it's a real grind. And the NFL, Chad, that time period between Thanksgiving and Christmas must be brutal. Your body must be sore. A lot of teams are just out of it. Even teams are into it. You still got a long way to go. Describe that time, that December time in the NFL.
It is tough. It is tough. It's dark outside. It's going to be mostly cold. You go inside and sit in dark meetings, and you walk outside for practice.
Yeah, the Broncos have no bubble at this, no field house at this time.
Yeah, so that's,
you're going to be outside.
It's a tough time of the year for the rookies. This is, you know, about the time when their college season was over.
Right.
They've gone home for Thanksgiving break. They come back and got some bowl practice in. So they've hit the rookie wall. This is more football than they've ever done in 1 year.
Right.
Yeah, it's a very trying time where the coaches are trying to keep some kind of energy going some way, somehow.
Chad, I would walk on that practice field. And I'll never forget it. Those players are like laughing and goofing around and I'm looking around at the players, and I'm like, oh my God. Like, these players are, they don't deserve Tim Tebow. Like, they are, this is, I was feeling bad that Tebow had to, like, play with these guys. And a huge chunk of them were gone the next year. And as that turned out, Tebow got that, you know, one win, right? Remember that? He was all screaming and yelling, nobody else gets the ball here. I get the ball. And he won one game that year.
Right.
It's almost like he willed them to victory in that one game at the end of the year.
Which is a thing.
I have never seen, in all my years covering the Broncos, 20-something years covering the Broncos, I have never seen a group of losers more than that collection of fellas. And not all of them. Not all of them. There were some great guys on that team. Like Wesley Woodyard was still on that team. But there was a collection of dudes on that team, Chad, in that December, Tebow's first year, who just did not deserve to be on an NFL field.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is a culture. That, to me, is poisonous.
It is. It absolutely is. And it does not take that many guys. You'd be surprised on how few guys it takes to start to spoil a culture for a team, how few guys it takes to turn a locker room into me first guys, or let me get my back page of my contract, all my incentives taken care of guys, not team first guys.
Mm.
And that, if you want to be one of the good guys we're trying to talk about in this scenario here, and you're on a losing team, it's very difficult. You can't walk around for 17 weeks angry. So you've got to somehow smile and laugh in the midst of losing. But at one point, does your smile and laughing go from, hey, I just need to lighten up my day, to I'm starting to accept losing?
Yeah,
I'm starting to accept my teammates' poor behavior?
Like, to me,
their unprofessionalism?
To me, like, it seems like Joe Thomas is a great dude. But it really does seem to me he just accepted it at some point.
You have to, because you can't. He was there for what, 10 years? You cannot walk around for 10 years angry and upset. So
as great as he is, does the will to win just get sucked out of you?
Or does, you know, I mean,
at the end of the day, Joe Thomas was fine being in Cleveland. Why wasn't Joe Thomas just demanding a friggin' trade? Just, I can't take this anymore. He knew they were going to be bad his last year. In his last year, why wasn't he just, like, demanding to be traded?
I can't answer that. I can't answer that.
Well, the only thing I can think of is he was fine with losing. That he really just loved his life. He was comfortable in his home. He just liked being adored by people there. He was comfortable. And losing just wasn't that big of a deal anymore.
For you and I, who, you know, clearly love to win, and I don't want to question Joe Thomas's love to win, it's hard to reconcile a guy of Hall of Fame ability, who certainly has some leverage with that Hall of Fame ability, to accept being there and not want to get out of that situation.
Now, I don't know everything, and your agent is the same agent as Joe, and maybe Peter could shed more light on it. Maybe it did burn inside of him, and maybe I'm castigating him in the wrong light. He just kept a good PR face. So perhaps I should just slow my roll a little bit. But that's the way it appears on the surface. You know, one guy who I was kind of critical was in the end of his career was Todd Helton, because Todd had options to be traded, and he, like, declined them because it was part of his contract that he had the right to refuse it. Well, on one hand, I appreciate his loyalty to Colorado, and he'll be, you know, Mr. Rocky. He should be in the Hall of Fame as far as I'm concerned. But, like, really? Like, there wasn't part of you that just wanted to go somewhere and win a World Series? Because it wasn't going to happen with the Rockies during that time period.
I feel you. It makes complete sense to me. There was a couple of years in Seattle where I was guilty of saying, you know, the team lost. I played well.
You said that out loud?
Not publicly in the paper, but to myself. And it would kill me to say those kind of things, but that's the mental gymnastics you had to do. Because, again, I can't walk around angry that we lost all the time. I've got to be a husband. I've got to be a father. I can't just be bitter. So how do I reconcile me pouring it out there on the field, but still the results don't show?
So what's this Broncos team going to be?
I would have to think culture has been a topic of discussion in coaches' meetings and in front office meetings all offseason long.
I think one of the best It's kind of the good thing and the bad thing with Elway is he hates losing. I mean, I just know it. It's a good quality. He does not like losing. He doesn't like to be embarrassed by it. I'll go there. The issue is, making so many dramatic changes sometimes and trying to not, trust people all the way because it's got to be my way or no way whatsoever. And look at Elway's tenure, how much change has happened. I mean, John Fox almost got fired after Super Bowl in New York, Super Bowl 48. Almost got fired. This close to being fired because of how poorly they were prepared and how they played in that game.
Which is a fireball offense.
Whoo! Has it ever happened? Has a head coach ever been fired?
No.
After losing the Super Bowl?
Not that I'm aware of.
I mean, boy, that's, and it almost happened. You know what? It probably should have happened.
If you don't prepare your team in the biggest game of the season, yeah, that speaks volumes.
Yeah.
That says all I need to know about you.
Yeah. And then the next year they came out and they played well, won the division again, but lost at home to Indy.
Mm-hmm.
And Peyton was all hurt and banged up. And, you know, it was clear Peyton couldn't, he just wasn't able to play a full, 17-week regular season. His just body wasn't there. He needed some sort of time to recuperate, and he just couldn't do it. Most guys can't. And Peyton certainly was no exception. And then Foxy and Elway after that, And not just Foxy and Elway. It was everybody was scrambling out. The Gase was gone. Del Rio's gone. Everybody's gone. And then comes Gary Kubiak. And the Broncos won a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty awesome. And that's the whole kicking and screaming thing and whatever. Pretty cool. But was it Kubiak? Was it Kubiak kicking and screaming? Was it Peyton Manning?
Well, Peyton was there when John Fox was there.
Peyton was there when John Fox was there. So maybe it was Gary Kubiak. Maybe it was.
The head coach has an opportunity to set a culture and set a locker room feel that no one else does in the building.
Well, I'll give you two stories when we come back. One, which is a little anecdote to say Kubiak had established that culture, and two, it got away from him. Get to that next. Here's a couple of stories of Kubiak setting the culture probably the right way and also sort of letting it slip away from him. And, of course, he was only the coach for a couple of years, Chad, with the Broncos. So it's not like there was a huge time frame, but it's amazing how quickly some things change. So this is a couple years ago. And he's doing a typical after-practice press conference. And a couple, I think, offensive linemen were just goofing around, as sometimes that happens, right? Mm-hmm. And they were throwing a football, and these guys were, I mean, they're offensive linemen. In fact, it was like Dylan Day and somebody else on practice squad. So they were guys who just didn't practice all that much, and they were just goofing around. Well, they're offensive linemen, so their throwing and catching skills are somewhat limited in terms of, if they're going to catch it or they're going to throw it the right way. And they were playing catch, goofing around, right near the press conference. So a ball that, there's like 15 cameras up on stilts and, 20 people gathered around. And, those cameras are expensive, for sure, TV cameras. You don't want them to be knocking them off their sticks or bumping something. So Kubiak, not a member of the media, but Kubiak sees what's going on sort of behind the cameras. He goes, hey, fellas, hold on a second. Hey, y'all, you got to move that. You can't do that right here. And the player's response was, okay, sir, sorry. And moved on down, the field. And Kubiak goes, okay, all right. Okay, well, next, like that.
Yeah.
And we all started laughing because everybody in the media just realized we just had witnessed a real, dad moment right here. He had that sort of gravitas,
mm-hmm.
That sort of feeling, that sort of, I can talk to you, but if I need to put my, boot up your butt for some reason, just like your dad, as you get older, hopefully your dad's your buddy. But every now and then, even probably if you get into your 20s or 30s, every now and then, Dad's probably got to, you know, stick a boot up your butt a little bit just to, you know, let you know, hey, you're being a knucklehead.
Straighten you out a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah.
You can't have it every day because you're a grown man, right? But just a little bit.
Son, hear me out real quick.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's talk here, son. That was kind of a cool moment. It's when I realized I know who's in charge here. And he certainly was. There's no doubt about it. There was no doubt about it from the second Gary Kubiak walked in to the second he walked away who was in charge. And he proved it when he didn't play Paxton Lynch.
Yeah.
And Elway went down at halftime to say, what's going on? And I want to win this game. We're going with Trevor. You know, it was a great quality, and it ultimately it probably was the quality that helped usher him out the door because he was going to stand up for his assistants. He didn't want to blow out half of his assistants. That was about to happen. Okay? However, sometimes you can get lost, Chad. And a story of Kubiak getting lost in the mix and sort of losing that sort of focus. Classic story. The Broncos, after they won the Super Bowl, somebody, not Gary Kubiak, thought it was a great idea to put a glass case with the Super Bowl trophies in the locker room. The real Super Bowl trophies. In a case in the locker room. Kubiak had no idea, didn't sign off on it, had no idea it had happened, and once he found out about it, did nothing about it. And I was told by a couple different people it was distracting. It sets a tone of we've already done it rather than a tone of, you know, let's inspire us. In fact, I think if you go through the coaching tome over the years, a lot of coaches take things down
that show
past success.
Mm-hmm.
And Kubiak was kind of oblivious to it. He just had kind of lost it a little bit, you know? And it was tough after Peyton left. Peyton left. Ware left. Who is this team? What's going on? And lots of new guys were on the team. And there's three Super Bowl trophies sitting in the locker room.
And half those guys did not do anything to earn any of those trophies. Yes.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's a reminder for the guys who are on the team to the other. You weren't on that team. And it's like, you were on the team. You were on the team. You were not on that team. These aren't yours either. But they're yours, but not yours. You could see where that would be a bit divisive. It wasn't well thought out.
No, not at all.
It didn't go over very well. And it has since been changed, by the way. That does not exist anymore.
Smart.
But what was shocking is that Kubiak himself was like, it all happened without his... It was an interesting moment.
It's weird as a head coach because you want to micromanage everything, but obviously you can't. And part of Gary's issues, you know, he knew that, was trying to step away and allow others to do some of that and take some of that for him. But then something like that comes up. Someone else gave this approval who you perhaps gave some power to, but it's not what you want. It doesn't help your team win. So then what do I do? Do I step back in and micromanage everything again?
It's a quirky situation.
Does the stationery need to come on my desk? Do I need to approve the stationery now?
Right.
You know, how far down the micromanagement rabbit hole do we go?
Yeah, but I'll say this. That's on the head coach.
Yeah.
Like, that. I don't even think that's micromanaging. I think that is I think the atmosphere of the locker room, like, offensive coordinator calls the plays, defensive coordinator calls the plays, position group, this, that, the other thing. The overall scope of how things are operating, that is on the head coach. So what the locker room looks like, how the meetings go, who's where, what's going on. You know, it's not like you have to live it 24/7, but I think that is on the head coach.
No, it
the
certainly
tone
is
on the head coach.
But I think Gary has talked about, you know, he was trying to relinquish some of the responsibilities to other people. And in the end, that's why he, you know, ended up quitting, because I can't do that and be successful.
Yeah, he couldn't do it.
Because things like that happened.
Right. So he was so obsessed with calling the plays, the gameplay, that sort of stuff. Some of those bigger moments would happen, and then there was nobody to really oversee things. But he loves football, man. He loves calling the plays. You know, that's who he is. But Vance doesn't have that responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if anything, VJ should not be just good at stuff like that. He should be great at stuff like that. I mean, this is why he should have the job, because he doesn't have those other types of responsibilities. That wasn't the case. Like, the one thing VJ had to be the best at was coaching the coaches. And the one thing he said that he has to get better at is coaching the coaches. Woo.
At least he recognized where you didn't go so well.
But I mean, you know, if you were to get this job, that should have been the thing you were the best at. Because that's the thing you would be in charge of the most. I just don't think Vance knew where to turn sometimes last year. I don't think he knew where to focus and where not to focus. I think it was confusing, to say the least. Hopefully this year would be a lot smoother.
He walked into a job not knowing what he didn't know.
All right. I got some fun stuff for you before you get to stink. Joe Flacco.
Okay.
Are you following any of this stuff?
With Lamar Jackson, Joe Flacco?
It's great.
Yeah.
You know, because I had my big five, Chad. I said there were five quarterbacks I would take ahead of any other player.
You pounded the table for the big five.
I was loud about that. So now Joe Flacco is being put on the hot seat. I'm watching ESPN, and Jeff Darlington, my man, is speculating on NFL Live that Lamar Jackson's going to take over on day one at Baltimore. How about that?
Wow. Sit the $100 million quarterback down?
Yeah. So here we go. Here's some Joe Flacco.
I mean, it can go a couple ways. I mean, right now when we do it, like, I think it's like a big red.
Let me set this up. This is a question about running plays with two quarterbacks. Running plays with two quarterbacks.
I mean, it can go a couple ways. I mean, right now when we do it, like, I think it's like a big red flag to, like, the defense. Like, hey, they're probably doing something. And listen, Lamar's a heck of an athlete and can throw the football. So the opportunities are definitely endless.
Give it to me one more time.
Joe, the question is essentially, I heard you guys are running plays with two quarterbacks on the field at the same time. What do you think?
I mean, it can go a couple ways. I mean, right now when we do it, like, I think it's like a big red flag to, like, the defense. Like, hey, they're probably doing something. And listen, Lamar's a heck of an athlete and can throw the football. So the opportunities are definitely endless.
Yeah, because we're watching practice. And you're running plays with two quarterbacks. Joe Flacco on being a runner.
Yeah, I'm definitely capable. I think if you ask our strength coaches and things like that, like, I'm not running too much different than I've always ran, and that's never been great, so it's not that high of a feat, but I don't think I'm going to be doing those things, but I'm capable.
This could go a couple of wacky ways in there in Baltimore.
Wow.
Right.
They've got to play this one really, really well. I mean, because we've seen what happened when you have uncertainty at the quarterback position. That's the leader of the team. Just that position dealt is just how that works. That's how that unfolds. And now you muddy the waters with a guy who could...
Oh, I don't know if you muddy the waters. I think you may clear some things up. I think you may put a boot up a butt right there. I think you may inspire somebody a little bit who's been a little flat. I don't have any issues with that at all. If you're so much better, Joe Flacco, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see. But things haven't been sweet. You know, it hasn't been a slam dunk. I think this is different than the decision from last year when we didn't know who was going to be.
No, it's completely different, but at the same time, it leaves the team without the clear understanding of who the guy is.
Because they've struggled, and Flacco hasn't been a definitive leader like he's needed to be.
Right.
So that's what happens.
But just because Joe hasn't been what people would expect doesn't mean that Lamar Jackson is ready to take
over. It's going
to
be interesting.
They're two separate questions.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's right. An interesting situation. I like the situation.
Because you were a Lamar Jackson guy.
No doubt about it. And I was absolutely pounding the table for the Broncos to at least take a flyer on Lamar Jackson at 32 to move back up to do that. And instead they drafted, auto-draft, Cortland Sutton. It's going to be fun. Fantasy football. Cecil Lammy coming Sunday, August 26th at the DoubleTree DTC. Q&A with Cecil from 1 to 3 on hand for your draft from 3 to 7. This was a blast last year. It'll be a blast this year too, as well. Food and draft board included. $15 per person. Register at 1043thefan.com. Baltimore and the Broncos at Baltimore September 23rd. Who will be the quarterback? We're fixing to find out. Here's Mark Schlereth.
It's your daily exclamation mark with Mark Schlereth, brought to you by Shomp BMW.
One of the biggest question marks that the Broncos face this coming season is coaching. And when I was on Speak for Yourself yesterday, talking with James Harrison off air, he just piqued my interest about what may be the biggest thing, the biggest challenge the Broncos face this year when he said this.
The big thing with Belichick is he's very regimented. He's disciplined. Everyone is going to be on the same page. It's not going to be anything as far as someone doing their own thing. Man, I seen Tom Brady run into him being scared to be late. Now, you see that, like, yeah. I don't even know what happens if you're late to a meeting over there.
Because everybody get their own
yes.
time.
So he was all over the network talking essentially about Bill Belichick and what separates him from other coaches. He talked about Tomlin. He talked about Bill Belichick, how it's a little bit looser in Pittsburgh. No big deal. We're all buddies here. And how Bill Belichick is essentially the principal. And you don't want to upset the principal because you know you're in deep trouble. The biggest takeaway after listening to James Harrison and talking with James Harrison yesterday and doing a show with James Harrison yesterday, when I think about the Broncos, and what they face, it's Vance Joseph. It's Joe Woods. It's the rest of this coaching staff. It's on you to be better. And I, for one, I think they're up to that challenge. I think they learn from their past transgressions and mistakes, and I don't think you'll see those things repeated. And I think that's part of the growing process for coaches, and I, for one, can't wait to see Vance get his tennies on the grass.
Mark Schlereth and Mike Evans, Monday morning at 6 on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.